when I look at all the accumulation of Kennedy material that I have in my home, I have to say, what are the advantages of working 8 years on one subject? Like you work in a laboratory to cure a disease. What are the advantages of staying with one thing that long, you know? And I think the main hope that I wanted for this nation was that when they saw truth, they would recognize it and be able to function and get the elective system back into the hands of the people.
Have you found that in talking to people, May, that that they do recognize truth?
No, that is a sad situation. People do not yet accept the fact of what happened in Dallas, and they write about every subject that's wrong with the nation, and they have not yet accepted these facts or the information of the various researchers. Each person's off on his own trip, and he's not ready yet for the truth of what happened that killed John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King. That's a pitiful situation, and I don't know the remedy. I just keep working and say, well, the facts are here. If you want them, anyone who wants to see them can come to my home, and I'm listed in the phone directory. If you don't want to call through KLRB and leave your name. A lot of people are afraid because of their jobs or situations to leave their names because someone would know who's showing an interest. That's how afraid people are. But I'm not afraid of your calling me, and I will welcome people into my home to see the research, and it's there if they want to know what happened. But by and large, most people don't want to know. But at my own personal level, I feel that I have been keeping up with the times that I live in. Like today's news is part of me. I've cut out 20 articles this morning from two papers. I understand many things as they're happening. I'm knowledgeable of the 60s and 70s. It has eliminated a generation gap in our family because the children have never been lied to, and they see things in the paper, and they see evidence or documents in my home, and we're not afraid to look at them. And I didn't make them up. And it's a guideline for them on how not to be fooled by people in the outside world. And I think of something that happened this week where my daughter was with a gentleman who teaches at the high school, had a group of young people at his home this Sunday night. And he's respected among the young people in the community. He's Mr. Cool. He helps them with their problems, and he teaches at the schools, and he had a sort of a seminar group at his home. And he sort of took my daughter aside and said, "Now, you don't really believe this stuff that your mother says, do you? And you can't believe all this conspiracy thing. How can you live with it, and you don't believe it?" And she was really shocked. She said, "Well, you don't think that Oswald, you know, killed John Kennedy, do you?" And this particular teacher said, "Oh, come now, of course he did. Or if he didn't, what difference did it make?" And that reaction...
I get that a lot.
Yeah. She came home, you know, really sick in the belly. Like, I like this man. And she begged him and his wife, you know, to come over to our home and meet with me. And she likes him. But she can see what he's doing. He's trying to help young people, and he's helping them just at an individual level. And he thinks that's where it's at. And she sees laws and repressions coming down so heavily that we know when it's time to leave the United States, and we're ready to go. But because other people can't see it, it's not that we don't like it here, but things are coming down every day, and we point them out. And this kind of person makes it necessary for us to leave because he can't accept what's happening. So he mentioned to her something about Robert Kennedy, and you don't believe that story, do you, either? And she said, "Well, don't you know that Sirhan didn't kill Robert Kennedy?" And she mentioned the fact that there's 10 bullets in the Ambassador Hotel, and even if he shot his gun all 8, there's still 10 at the police department in L.A. And this man, you know, just didn't understand that, and she was trying to stick with certain facts that she knew, and she came home really very crushed, almost ready to cry, like, "Mom, why don't you have them over? Because they don't know what's going on, and they're trying to help us, and they're trying to help other people in their world. And all they're doing is helping people adjust and become human or humanistic into a mechanical age where the laws are coming down to keep track of everybody, photograph everybody, make information on everybody, intimidate them. And how can you be a human in this kind of world?" I got a call 11:30, about 2 nights ago, from a boy who listens to the program, and he was going down Carmel Valley Road from Ford Road out to to Pacific Grove, and he was photographed twice. He was on his Honda. And he said, how do you handle this? And what do you do? And I said, well, why did they photograph you? Are you political? Were you with somebody? What were you doing? And he said, I don't know why, but I got a ticket when I got to Pacific Grove, and I'm going to take it to the court and object to it. And while I stood there, they took my picture again. And I couldn't put together what he was saying, but it was a real fear. And he called me because he had heard the programs, and he thought maybe I could ease some of his fears about what's happening in our society. If you go out in Carmel or down Carmel Valley Road or into Pebble Beach or Monterey, you see every fifth or sixth car is a police car. I don't know what's going to happen on the peninsula or what's going to come down, but there's something very big happening in this area and around the country. In certain areas in Los Angeles, it's about ready for a certain bloody turmoil that I got information is going to take place. And something is going to happen here. These police cars are everywhere. I don't know why. But this boy called me, and he's not going to call that teacher who's helping the other people in the area with problems because they don't have the answers, and he knows that I'm coming close to it, and he called for some advice.
It's unnerving to, I walked out of my front door one day, and there was someone photographing the front door movies.
Yeah.
And of me standing in my front door.
Well, when I left here, Glory, about 3 weeks ago, I went to Pacific Grove to leave a cassette that we made here to be typed up, and I pulled off a side street, and some friends of mine, my daughters, were pulling into the main street I was turning off, and they honked, and we waved at each other, and then they were just shocked because there was a blue truck in back of the microphone and somebody talking on the microphone, and they called to tell me, and when I came in here last week, there was a sheriff's car at the corner of my street talking on a microphone, you know, and then pulling up to the corner. I don't know what's happening. I know what's happening, but the thing is that if you take the information or the data or the facts on the political assassinations that work down to the local area, and you're knowledgeable, you're not taken by surprise by things later. And I feel that I can handle whatever comes along and try to absorb it, and I may not have all the answers. But I'm not in for the shock that a lot of people are going to have about a year from now or 2 years from now. And another advantage of working with this material for so long is you develop certain traits. You develop a persistence or a curiosity, and hopefully you make it useful to somebody. But you believe in something, and you stay with it, and you develop a certain strength in the information fitting together. It would be better if it didn't fit together. You know, it would be better a long time ago if the inconsistencies became answered, the questions became answered. But you have a certain feeling of honesty within yourself that is hard to define. That if you have that quality, you know what it is, and you have it about you in your actions or your face. And if you don't have it, you also show those same anxieties. Now, there was a picture in the paper of Ted Kennedy standing over the grave of his brother.
And that says an awful lot.
Yes, he went at 7 in the morning, and he's standing there with his arms crossed, and you get the feeling like he's asking, what should I do? Do I take this one more leap? 3 boys are dead, and there's one living. Am I going to answer this particular call and show them they can't intimidate me or cow me or dump that girl into the river and do the things that they've done? Do you take that chance, or do you stand by all the children of the families that were left behind as the living male? Do you serve your nation, or what do you do? I'm not saying that I agree with much of what Ted Kennedy does, or what I don't know what's in his head all of the time. We don't know anybody's minds, really. But it's more of a human being that comes through in this picture than the one that was down at Miami talking to the labor this week. Mr. Meany spoke of Richard Nixon in a way that was frightening, where he actually used the word his hatred for the president. Now, even in Dallas, when John Kennedy was killed and certain people in that community were responsible for that murder, they'd never said they hated him. They accused him of different things. But in the paper this week, the president was accused by George Meany of being a weak and dangerous man. And he said in quotes, he was shaking like this, and he moved his hands trembling. This is a weak man, and a weak man is a dangerous man, and he's weak because he's scared. And he insists that there have been deliberate deceptions by the Nixon administration. And he was lashing out at Richard Nixon for the position he has taken. George Meany feels that strongly the country is endangered by the president, because it was one thing for a strong president to practice symmetry, but when he is weak, it is something else. And he is very much afraid of the actions of Richard Nixon. Now, I do not approve of the method of release that people use today of the comedy. The funny movie that's out, Milhouse, or the movie on Trisha's Wedding, or the book by Philip Roth on the gang. I've mentioned these before. Hitler was very funny in the same way. And I don't think that these things are funny. The only funny thing is you people who laugh. There's something very sick about the silly grin of listening to funny stories or records about Richard Nixon. I have a sense of humor, and I laugh at my work sometimes, and I have a button collection, such as Sterilize LBJ, No More Ugly Children, and so forth. But LBJ wasn't funny either. There was nothing funny about LBJ or anything he did. And there's nothing funny about Richard Nixon. Now, in case you didn't catch the news this week, on the anniversary of John Kennedy's death, John Connally was asked his opinions of that particular day. And he said, in quotes, "I didn't realize today was November the 22nd. And therefore, if I don't respond, I have no comments further." He looked startled when he was asked about the question and said his energies were on President Nixon's economic program. John Connally was in the car where John Kennedy was murdered.
That would be a hard day to forget. I can't forget it.
Nobody in the nation can forget it. And I think when you work with these pathological liars, and that's what they have to be, John Connally could never forget that day. Nobody standing on the corner forgot it. Certainly sitting in the car, nobody forgot it. Or Mr. Kellerman, the Secret Service man who was sitting in the front seat, who said a flurry of bullets came at us, and the commission said, "You mean two or three?" He said, "Gentlemen, I've been in this too long. It was a flurry of bullets." And Mr. Greer, who drove the car, never forgot it, because he said if he had ever seen the sight, he never would have taken that route. They slowed down to 10 or 12 miles an hour and went under a bridge that was unguarded in front of a building that was unguarded. He didn't forget it. He almost went insane and had to retire. He didn't forget the day. John Connally is the Secretary of the Treasury because of that day. And his mind adjusts the fact that it never happened. People don't refer to him associating with the Dallas trip. But it was John Connally and Lyndon Johnson and Clifton Carter who were in El Paso in the early summer, spring, with John Kennedy and said, "You are coming to Dallas in the fall to bridge the gap in the Democratic Party." He was one of the men responsible for the trip and went to Washington. John Kennedy didn't want to be in that motorcade or be in Dallas, and John Connally was one of the last men who went to Washington to persuade him to come. And it is a very nice fact that our brain accommodates to these particular instances. So if he's protecting his gray matter, well and good, but don't you forget that a man who has the power that he has to tie up your taxes and your economy and decisions on wages and prices and rentals, if you can raise your rent or get a raise in salary. John Connally's in that position because of Dallas in 1963, and I will make a prediction to you, listening audience, that he will be president of the United States someday. I could give you many predictions I've made in the past that are true, that came true. I brought a list of them in, Gloria. I predict that John Connally will be president of the United States and that Richard Nixon will become a past thing, probably, I would say, dead. I think that Ronald Reagan, Spiro Agnew, and John Connally will rule America. And that is a prediction. Take it for what it's worth. Sit on it for 3 or 4 years. Get in touch with me in a few years. Now, one of the things that I spoke to the students about at school is the fact that they were too young to remember anything about John Kennedy. So that when you talk about the contrast between the present administration or Lyndon Johnson and John Kennedy, it's hard to visualize just what the differences were between these men. And I recommended to the students that they borrow records or listen to speeches to see what the world was going to be like or what the hope was, or the promise, and see how far we've gone in these years. And this morning's paper had a review of a play that opened up in New York called JFK. And a man comes out in two acts, in two different suits, and you see the back of his head. And he reads the speeches of John Kennedy. And the review says, in quotes, "This is not a cozy evening of homey memories. Kennedy's style is on the stage, and you are generally alone with the man and his public utterances, starting with his presidential press conferences, where the reporters ask him questions. And there's a background of unstereotyped pictures that go on a screen, and you wonder, where on earth did they get them? And a contemporary soundtrack and a clock ticking away that is very effective. There are no references to his wife or family, but the evening clips off with the final pistol shot. It's done very tastefully. The play is called JFK. The review says it is not a drama, nor is it a show. But to see and hear it with tightening throat is to face what we had and what we lost and perhaps what we all were." Now, in the newspaper Sunday was an article called "An Expert's Warning, Beware of the Experts." It's by a man who works in the Pentagon, in the CIA, in the State Department, in research analysis corporations. He worked on arms control. He was a director of the Arms Control and Disarmament Study. He worked at Caltech, the University of California, for years for our government. His name is Sidney Slomak, and this is what he tells you. "Take your society, your laws, integrity, and your country back from the experts. I have been an expert, and I tell you, the experts have gone wild, and they have gone like cancer. And nothing is more expert than cancer, and nothing is a better example of power without purpose. And cancerous is ignorant, but it works and it grows. I have left all of the government experts behind," he said, "and he wants something that is real. He has worked with the social scientists, and he's watched what they have done to our society. He said one of the leading social scientists has said that the chief accomplishment of this age is to change so many political problems into technical ones. We see a Vietnam as Auschwitz, the result of technical solutions to political problems. I spent a number of years as an officer in the CIA," he said, and he gives his background in the various jobs. "For 16 years, I worked exclusively within the established foreign policy and the government. And only in the late 60s, did I come to understand that the government and the business and what is correctly called the establishment were inert, and they were committed to the shape of things as they have been to inaugurate human policies that for change, the people must take the government back to themselves. Only when people are awakened from the grasping power from these mindless mega institutions are you going to effect changes." Now, he goes into the fact that for 15 years at home and abroad, the United States government is not concerned with human life or its purposes, but only with ignorant power and control and with death. He said this government is the greatest polluter on the earth, is an agent of potentially total repression, and it is the greatest threat to continued human life the world has ever faced. I do not say these things lightly, he said. The entire system of expertise and secrecy, and he means the secrecy in our government, is designed to prevent people of this country from determining their own destinies, and it's basically fake. Over the last 20 years, I've had continuous top-secret clearances from the United States Army, State Department, CIA, Defense. I never learned one thing of value in this secret system. Everything valuable I have learned was known and perceived and written from an open and scholarly, unclassified source or from newspapers, journals, or my own observations. There is no silent majority. Man is a speaking animal. There is only a silenced majority, repressed, clamped down, frightened majority, and that is you. And you are frightened, and you have been silenced. And he said, look in your war rooms at the walnut, massive files, contracts for millions of dollars worth of death and death research, fancy desks and chairs, paraphernalia of power, and they are all yours, and they belong to you. Take them back and make human use of them and make this your society as it is your life. Everything you do, everything you can do to please yourself and build your life is more beautiful and more real than the fakery, abstraction, obsession, and desire for death that rules this country today. That's the only secret worth knowing. Once you know it, you can take back this nation with difficulty and end the American nightmare, make it the American dream," end quotes. Now, the reason I read the article is to get back to the fact that the information on the death of John Kennedy that would prove who killed that man 8 years ago is locked up in the National Archives under the designation of National Security Top Secret. If Oswald did it alone, we could all examine the evidence. If there was a conspiracy, it's gone 8 years. We are on a road of death. Everybody working inside the department is going to speak up who has a moral fiber in him. Mr. Slomik is writing a book. People are going to have to talk about this system. The book is called The American Nightmare. Computer and Automation, I'll go back to that again, every month has an article on the coup d'etat that overthrew the country. I can't emphasize this enough, and I want to say one more time that anybody who does not believe me and wants to get together and examine a little bit of the documentary evidence, I will share it with you. I'm not here to scare you. And you've been in my home, Gloria. You've seen the amount of research.
Oh, yes. Right.
We're not here to scare people.
No, just to wake them up.
Yeah, I mean, what is this all about? You know, somebody listened to the show and said, well, she's making a lot of rumors about the Kennedys and Marilyn Monroe. What kind of research does she have? Or she's talking about drug problems, and she talks about drugs. She can't be knowledgeable about...
They'll pick up on one thing, and possibly with the intention of discrediting you, and then the stock phrase is, if she's wrong on this point, then I question the rest of her points. And then you have to go back and say, you know, everything that she says is documented. I had a talk just yesterday with a young man who's also a teacher, and these same points come up, and it's almost like I could make a recording when I meet people and they ask me what I do at the station, and then I'm hesitant to say that I do the dialogue assassination because many people just, forget it. You know, they don't want to hear about
it. It brings out their real fear. Yeah.
And I said, well, you really should know about it because the time is very short. Mm-hmm. And usually that makes their ears perk up. But then I have to go through the whole thing again, you know, about your 8 years of research and document you when I shouldn't have to.
You're the same people that will take one sentence that I say on an entire program and say, well, if this is what she said, then nothing else is accurate. Those same people, if I met them 6 years ago and told them that our government financed a war in Laos that's been going on 6 years, or that there was a systematic plan, say, to kill off all the Panthers, or if I were to say that our CIA killed Diem for a particular reason, they would judge me totally insane. Then I was saying things about the funding of money and foundations and the connections of foreign policy to the State Department or the CIA that people would say, well, that's not true. And if I quote an article by Evelyn Knight, you know, who came out last year, she's the head of the whole State Department, and she's a very right-winger, if you can put in that classification. Her husband's a millionaire. She's very much establishment, and she works hand-in-glove with J. Edgar Hoover. She's in charge of the Passport Department. She had an article in Time Magazine, which is an establishment magazine, saying the State Department is riddled with deaths and political assassinations and stinks to high heaven. So her quotation was that effect. If I say it, people say, well, where do you get the documents? I'm sure that Evelyn Knight has documents of these political assassinations. She doesn't just take it out of thin air. But if you don't want to believe it's happening, you don't have to believe it. I was speaking to a teacher out at MPC on the telephone this week, and somebody didn't think that we could get along or that he didn't like what I said out there because of his political stand. And I said, look, whatever you think politically, I probably agree with you more than I do the people you think I'm lined up with. Because Richard Russell, a member of the Warren Commission, had a news conference in 1970, January, where he said, I never believed Oswald did it alone. And I brought in a book, we briefly have time. It's written by Jesse Curry, chief of police in Dallas, and he wrote a book about 2 years ago. And it's called The Retired Dallas Police Chief, Jesse Curry, reveals his personal JFK file. Now, everyone accuses the Dallas police of a conspiracy, and I say not all members were involved. Well, on page 81, Jesse Curry goes into the story of the assassination, and he says, the assassination evidence, how does the puzzle fit? And this is what he says in quotes. Within 12 hours after the assassination of John Kennedy, investigators were overwhelmed by the vast amount of evidence that linked Oswald to the president's death. And in the years that followed, many theories and counter-theories were presented. The evidence gathered during the assassination weekend was dispersed in many directions. The FBI had already begun to seize evidence at the scene. Secret Service agents seized the president's body before the required autopsy was performed. Although most of the evidence gathered by the police department did not remain in our hands very long, early Friday evening, November 22nd, FBI agents were anxious to have all the physical evidence of the murder released to them. Dallas police officials couldn't go into it. He said, much of what was released to the FBI, I took careful note of the evidence and kept a detailed personal file. Some of the evidence has been completely misrepresented in stories told about the assassination, and bits of seemingly important evidence have remained almost completely ignored. Theoretical reconstructions of what might have happened should not be allowed to dominate the actual eyewitness accounts and evidence. Many questions remain as to how the evidence fits together. Every man must decide for himself and act as his own jury. Now, that's Jesse Curry of the Dallas Police, who feels that these things should be available. Now, in his book, on page 85, he has a picture of Oswald's weapon, and he tells you that the fingerprints were such poor quality they weren't able to identify any of Oswald's fingerprints on it. On page 87 of his book, he says a paraffin test was taken of Oswald's face that did not reveal nitrates from having fired a rifle, thus offering no proof that Oswald had fired a rifle. On page 87, the chief of police of Dallas said that there were retouched versions of pictures of Oswald with the weapon used in magazines and newspapers. Why were they retouched? On page 89 of his book, he goes into a list of pieces of evidence that were picked up by the FBI for tests, and he shows that none of them really fit the case, that a paper bag was picked up from the book depository that he was supposed to have brought the gun in, and then he shows that there was no evidence that Oswald had the gun in there. There were no fibers from the blanket. He says no fibers were found associated with the blanket from his shirt on the paper bag or on the shirt. And he goes into the evidence of Oswald's fingerprints that weren't on the gun, the nitrate test that wasn't there, and a lot of discrepancies that later were to come out. He said no latent fingerprints of any value were on Oswald's revolver. That's the one that was shot Officer Tippett. Now, this is what I keep trying to say on the shows, Gloria, that I'm not talking about Birch's bullets or communist bullets or Republican or Democrat or peace and freedom. These are not political issues. This is the chief of police of Dallas who's written a book telling you that the nitrate test showed he didn't shoot anybody. There were no fingerprints on his revolver, none on the rifle, that the pictures of him were doctored. And how much more do people need than the actual facts of a thing to get involved into what really happened? It's just shocking to me to accumulate this amount of material and have people walk up to you and say, well, if you think there's drugs on campus, then your research isn't accurate. We can handle that, but I feel sorry for these people because the documents are here, and if they will listen every week as we roll on and on with more facts and evidence and keep their minds open, I think they'll gain a lot by not being afraid to listen. And I thank you for the opportunity to share it with them.
Oh, we thank you,
man. You have the courage.
You've been listening to Dialogue. Dialogue is a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News.